Welcome to another broadcast of the Pamela Folan Show on the Artist First Radio Network. All past shows are available in podcast form. Please visit artistfirst.com. She's the author of 9 books, a cat and dog expert, and the host of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Pamela Folan.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Pamela Folan Show tonight. I'm happy to be with you, whether you're listening to me live or on the archive. I'm happy you're here. So for those of you that maybe don't know about me, let me tell you a little bit about myself. As Z-Man said, I'm the author of 9 different children's books for several different reading levels. I have a picture book series, Sunny the Wonder Dog, that is based on my real-life dog. Sunny was so intelligent. He was a little Shih Tzu that I had in my life for just over 9 years. He was so intelligent, I had to come up with a creative way of explaining his intelligence. And he had to be an alien from outer space disguised as a Shih Tzu, because he was just so smart. So that's what the first book in the Sunny the Wonder Dog series is about. And that book is titled Sunny from Outer Space. And the second book of that series is actually coming out in just a couple of days here on March 10th. Sunny's Talent will be available on Amazon.com. And that's the second book in the Sunny the Wonder Dog series that is where Sunny has adapted completely to his life on Earth with 7-year-old Pamela and is so used to being with her that he is totally thrown when she starts second grade. And he suddenly has all day to find something else to do other than be with his little human companion. So he then starts accidentally revealing how smart he truly is to Pamela and her family and kind of lets his guard down. So you'll have to get the book and find out whether Sunny actually reveals his true identity to Pamela and her family in Sunny's Talent that comes to Amazon.com March 10th. And my other book series is a middle grade book series, which is geared for 7 to 12-year-old readers or just pet-loving adults that love animals and love a quick, easy read of animal stories, because this book series is based upon my experience of finding an abandoned litter of kittens. I found an abandoned litter of 4 kittens almost 7 years ago, and I bottle raised them. I still have all 4 of them because I was so in love with them after being up with them every 4 hours around the clock for 6 weeks. And that experience, I say, is a once-in-a-lifetime incredible experience that has inspired this book series. So 13-year-old Megan is the heroine of this series, and she is largely based upon myself at 13 years old. And she is learning about pet care and responsibility and honesty in Megan's World book series by Balba raising an abandoned litter of kittens. And then she starts a pet sitting business and starts working with a local veterinarian and is taking an interest in becoming a vet herself one day. And the 7th book in that series, Megan to the Rescue, will be out later this summer. So check out my website, PamelaFolan.com, for all the latest details of my books and what is going on. But tonight, I'm going to be talking about pet sitting, because I grew up in Plano, Texas, and worked as a dog trainer and pet sitter for 10 years. So I have lots and lots of experience with pet sitting and some great stories that I hope you guys really appreciate. And for those of you listening to the broadcast in the archive, let me just preface this by saying this broadcast originally aired at the end of February. So it's really close to March, and yeah, even though I've been out of school for a really long time, I still associate March with one thing: spring break. And if you're a kid going on spring break, you're just thrilled to be out of school for the week and get some downtime with your friends, family. But if you're an adult with a house full of pets like I am, traveling becomes a lot more of a production as you try to find a family member or friend, a neighbor, or a professional pet sitter to care for your pets. So that's what I'm going to be talking about tonight, is all the different experiences I had as 10 years as a pet sitter and how differently pets behave when it's suddenly someone other than their owners caring for them. So whether you're listening with your next vacation in mind or interested in starting a pet sitting business of your own, I hope you find this broadcast interesting. So we're going to start off from the very beginning, which is before you leave for a vacation, as you're getting ready to go. And I've seen this firsthand with my own pets. My little Shih Tzu Sunny that I was talking about earlier was completely in tune with my emotion and so sensitive to what I was thinking and doing, as most pets, including cats and dogs and everything, are. But he would see the suitcase, and I swear he would get an upset stomach just at the sight of the suitcase coming out of the closet, which is why I started really trying to hide and do packing as last minute as I could, because seeing him already getting an upset stomach made me really dread traveling a whole lot, because no one wants to leave a sick baby at home. So I started putting the suitcase open in the floor of my closet and packing it for days, but literally not taking it out of the closet till I was ready to walk out the door and leave on vacation. And just this simple act of doing this kept Sunny from getting sick, kept all my cats from being aware of what was going on. And I leave the house, and they really didn't know that I had any indication that I was leaving until that last second as I brought the suitcase down the stairs. So I found that really, really fascinating, thinking back about it, because it's something I still do with my cat and my new dog, Teddy, is I pack that suitcase in the closet, and it does not come out till I'm ready to leave the house. So I've never seen what Teddy will do if I have the suitcase out for days, because I just don't want that stress. I don't want to have to worry about them getting sick before I even leave for vacation. And the next thing about pet sitting is have a complete itinerary with contact information available for your pet sitter, as well as your pet's vet information. And I've had both sides of this itinerary contact information stories, I can tell you. I've had it personally where I've had to be in contact with my pet sitter, telling them I'm going to be home late. Can you please go check on the pets an extra time for me? Because the last time I was coming back from Corpus Christi visiting my aunt and uncle, there was a thunderstorm in Dallas, Texas, where I was flying into. So Corpus was beautiful, sunny weather, and yet my flight was delayed for, I forget, 4, 5, 6 hours. It was a pretty significant delay, because they kept pushing it back, only 1 hour, 1 hour, 1 hour, and suddenly 4, 5, 6 hours later. And so I'm having to, you know, contact my pet sitter and tell them, okay, I thought I'd be home in time for dinner, but please go feed my pets, go let my dog outside and take care of them one more time, because it's going to be really late when I get home now. So that made me appreciate having the itinerary for the pet sitter, having information and a good contact number for my pet sitter, because I was able to keep in constant communication with her as I was sitting in Corpus Christi Airport wondering if I was actually going to be able to get home that night or not. And then, of course, I've had it on the other side of it where I'm the pet sitter and I'm trying to keep in contact with the client, and know what they're doing. And in this particular case, the husband and wife left and left me the pet vet information and the husband's cell phone information and asked me to, you know, contact them every day and update them on how their pets are doing. So I said, okay, no problem. And I did that. But a few days into their trip, I text the client a question about their dogs, and I didn't get a response back. And these clients were, like, always on top of it, texting me right back and answering my calls immediately. So I thought, well, they must be really having a good time. I let it go for a couple hours, and then I tried to call the husband's cell phone number, which was the only contact number I had for this client, and it went straight to voicemail. Okay, so I was starting to panic because I thought something's wrong with this phone. It shouldn't be doing this. And I looked at the itinerary they gave me. There was no reason they would be on an airplane or have their phone off for any reason. But I had no choice but to just kind of wait and see if they didn't turn that phone back on and call me back because I didn't have another contact number. Well, thankfully, not too long after I had called and left a message on the husband's cell phone, the wife called me from her cell phone and told me that he had dropped his cell phone running for the plane at the airport, and his phone was broken and was not working. So I then had her cell phone to communicate with for the rest of their trip, and that experience kind of taught me, get everybody's cell phone number that you can before the client leaves, because that is fairly common. You know, you don't think you're going to drop and break your cell phone. You kind of think your cell phones are indestructible. But when you need them, man, you don't want to be without it. And especially trying to keep in contact with this client, I was very grateful that the wife called me from her cell phone and I had a second number to stay in touch with this client. And like I said earlier, another important thing for pet sitters to have is the pet's vet information. I know I went overboard when I leave my pets with the pet sitter, giving the vet my credit card information and a letter of authorization, my cell phone number. I mean, I go all overboard so that my vet does not give the pet sitter any trouble if that she would have to bring the pet to the vet, but it's not something that I ever want to have happen while I'm out of town, and it's not something that any pet sitter wants to have happen on their watch while they're watching someone else's pets. You just don't want to have to worry about taking a pet that isn't yours to the vet, and you think, oh, it's easy, I'll be able to take care of the pets, no problem. But it doesn't always work out that way. And as a pet sitter, I learned you have to be able to tell the client in a calm and confident manner the pet's exact symptoms, what's going on with them, how long the pet has been showing these signs of illness, and any other details and questions that the client might have relating to the pet's illness and activities leading up to that illness. So I've had several experiences where I did have to take pets to the vet while I was watching them for a client. One of the times, I was playing ball with a dog out in the backyard. It was, I don't know, the second or third day of the client's trip, and as he was running after the ball like we'd done every afternoon that I'd been watching him, he caught his toenail on something in the grass and ended up breaking off a toenail in the middle of that quick, which if you remember, the quick is that sensitive nerve ending in the dog's toenail that makes it bleed really badly. So his dog, obviously, it hurt, and he yipped. And I knew exactly when it happened by his yip and his sudden not wanting to put any weight on his front paw, and because it was bleeding like crazy. So I remember this was one of my early pet sitting day jobs, and I remember being terrified to have to call this client and say, you know, he pulled his toenail back and broke it off playing tennis ball out in the backyard with me. But I did, and I ended up having to take him to the vet to get the toenail clipped back correctly and get the bleeding to stop. But it taught me that being, you know, able to tell the client calmly what's going on with the pet and react quickly to the situation is absolutely the best thing for the pet. And yeah, the client was worried and concerned about the pet in the moment, but ultimately she was so grateful that I responded as quickly as I did to what happened and didn't try to handle it myself and got her dog to the vet and taken care of. And I lucked out on that one because it was a weekday. The vet was still open for business. I didn't have to do any of the emergency rooms or any new vet. It was the dog's regular vet that I got to take him to, and they got his toenail fixed up right away for me, and the client was so thankful that I did take care of her dog so well. So that kind of gave me a little bit of confidence in handling a veterinary situation with the client's dog, because a few years later, I wasn't so lucky with an easy dog's normal vet experience when I had to take a client to a vet, because this client, their dog, was completely normal, acting fine. You know, we were playing, having a good time, and this dog, she loved her food. I could hardly get the food bowl to the floor before she was scarfing her food down. So when this client's dog stopped eating a couple days into their trip, I immediately knew, okay, something's wrong. Because when a dog stops eating, or any pet that's really, really addicted to their food stops eating, there's something seriously wrong. So I immediately called this dog's owners and asked them what they wanted me to do. And the client told me that their dog has gone for a day without eating every once in a while and not to really worry about it. That first day, they asked me to give the dog more of the canned food and less of the dry. They asked me to make boiled chicken and rice for the dog, a homemade dog food essentially, and said just, you know, kind of keep an eye on her, and if anything changes, to call them back, because I was able to tell them she's still playing ball. She's still happy and active. She just takes two licks of her kibble, and she's not eating the rest of it, which was very atypical for this dog. So I said, okay, if any other symptoms occur, I will call you back. If not, I'll talk to you the next day. So I, you know, tried everything they suggested, the wet food, the homemade food, and I thought for sure this dog would eat the chicken and rice, if nothing else, for sure. Mm-mm. She took one or two licks of it and turned her nose up to it and walked away, and I didn't have a good feeling right then, but she was still happy. She was still active. So I waited until the next day when I was supposed to call the owners back, because she wasn't throwing up. She didn't have diarrhea. I really had no other symptoms to go off of. And they wanted me to wait and said she'd been doing not eating for a day here and there. So I did. And the next morning, when I was supposed to call them back, I didn't get them. I had to leave a message, which kind of terrified me because I knew this dog hadn't eaten for now a full 24 hours. And it was Saturday, and the vets were going to be closing early. So I was kind of really anxious waiting for these clients to call me back. And they did. And yeah, looking back, it was only a couple hours. But those couple hours made all the difference because it was now after 12. Their dog's normal vet was closed. So I ended up having to take this dog to the emergency vet once I talked to the clients and told them fully what was going on. And me and this dog spent the better part of the afternoon and evening in the emergency clinic. And the vet talked to me and the clients by phone and ran a bunch of tests on this dog. I don't even remember all the tests that he ran trying to find out why she wasn't eating and asking me, did she get into the trash? Did she eat any other pet's food? All these things that could have led to her not eating. And I was like, no. She didn't eat anything else because there's only another dog in the house. I've been there. The trash cans and all the cabinets are still intact and secured. And so, you know, I really had the vet stumped. He keeps running test after test on the dog and really wasn't finding anything and said, oh, I can send you home with some different wet food and appetite stimulants. Well, when the clients heard that, the dog and I had already been there for several hours. The clients were really wanting an answer. So they actually agreed to let the vet do an ultrasound on this dog's stomach to check for foreign objects. After all the other tests and examinations that he had done came back negative. Well, of all things, what the ultrasound showed on this dog, if she had eaten a twist tie, like you put on a trash bag or that comes on a bread bag from the grocery store, and that little twist tie was what the vet said was upsetting her stomach and making her not want to eat. So he gave her a super, super strong laxative, saying there's no reason that this can't, you know, pass through her system without causing harm to her, and once we get out of her system, she'll start eating again. So he gave her that before we left the clinic and then sent me and the dog home to the client's house with some appetite stimulants and the bland new veterinary prescribed wet dog canned dog food. Well, I never really saw that this twist tie passed through the dog, but I know it had to because about 36 hours later, she was eating her regular dry dog food, licking that bowl clean and completely normal by the time the clients returned without the aid of any appetite stimulants that the vet had sent home with us. And again, the clients were so thankful that I caught on to the dog's illness and took care of the dog as soon as I did. And they were thankful for me doing that. So again, it gave me confidence of, okay, this isn't always the best situation to be in, but the clients are much more appreciative that I did be honest and handle the pet illnesses as quickly as I did, as opposed to thinking, oh, it'll just go away, or I can handle this myself. And so I definitely gained a lot of confidence from that aspect. And I also learned that these are really mild emergency cases that I had with the client's pet. And I'm so thankful that these were the two big pet, other people's pet to the vet experiences that I had in the 10 years that I was pet sitting, because, yeah, it could have been so much worse. And, you know, I absolutely love all the pets and all the clients I worked with for so many years. And I really did learn a whole lot from these little minor, as they were, experiences, and gave me confidence to be able to talk to people, even when the situation is not ideal. So I appreciate you listening to the Pamela Folan Show. We are going to take a short commercial break, and I'll continue talking to you about pet sitting in just a couple minutes.
Get ready, Jade. I've got a surprise adventure you're going to love.
Really?
We're going to swim with Sally the tiger cub. Even get a photo with her that you can share with all your friends.
I don't want to go, Mom.
Feel all right, Jade? I thought you'd love this.
I'm okay, but I feel terrible for those poor tiger cubs. Did you know that they're stolen from their mothers the day they're born?
What?
Yeah. How'd you feel if someone kidnapped me at birth?
Well...
And when the cubs do normal things like nip and paw, they're punished so they'll sit still for photos. And how would you feel if you were a baby and they pushed you into a deep pool to swim for your life?
I never thought about it that way.
And when they get too big to pet, they end up being imprisoned in tiny cages.
Where'd you learn all that?
From StopBigCatAbuse.com.
Studies show that children who learn compassion for animals show more compassion for humans. So teach your children well. Learn more at StopBigCatAbuse.com.
Hello, Arnold Schwarzenegger here with an important announcement. You may remember me from movies like The Terminator, but I would like to talk about one particular movie where I go to Mars. There is this mountain called Pyramid Mountain, and all this crazy alien shit goes on inside it. Do you think that's all science fiction? Think again, my friend. That's why you have to tune in to Pyramids on Mars UFO radio show on artistfirst.com. My friend Kevin Estrella, he is in a band called Pyramids on Mars. He has also been contacted by aliens. This guy has been a guest on over 15 UFO radio talk shows, so you have to listen to him. There's something going on, and it can't be ignored. He interviews people who have been abducted by aliens. He interviews alien-human hybrids. This is no bullshit. So get to the chopper! Do whatever you have to do and go listen. Get your ass to Mars. Pyramids on Mars. UFO Radio.
Thanks for joining us on the Pamela Folan Show on the Artist First Radio Network. Are you a cat or a dog lover? Do you have pets? We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email to dj@artistfirst.com. Back to your host. It's Pamela Folan.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for sticking with me through the break. I'm excited that you're back for the second half of the episode where I'm talking about pet sitting. And you guys know from listening to past episodes or the first half of this show that I love pets, and I was a pet sitter and a dog trainer for 10 years prior to becoming an author. So we're going to continue talking about pet sitting, and I'm going to continue telling you about the different experiences I've had as a pet sitter. And I'm going to take a detour here immediately and explain how I've learned that my own pets don't act the same when they're with someone else other than me, because this is something I experience a lot as a pet sitter. The pets don't act the same for me as they do their owner. And this is something I've now seen in my own pets. When I leave my dog, Teddy, with my parents for the day, he doesn't act the same. He doesn't even want to eat his own dog food. He wants their dog food. And he gets up and he follows my mom all around the house, just whining and crying and acting all antsy. Do the commands that he knows and he does for me on a daily basis, which one of them is to lay down on his bed and be still and quiet while I'm working on the computer. And he won't do that at all for my parents. And he normally only follows me if I'm in the kitchen wrestling food or cooking. But my mom, oh, she cannot shake him. He is at her heels continuously. And, of course, my cats, they never come out from under the bed when the pet sitter comes over. I leave these, you know, detailed instructions asking her to, you know, spray catnip on their scratching post and, you know, drag their feather toy across the floor, give them some exercise and stimulation that they're used to from me when she comes over. All she can do is look under my bed and count glowing eyeballs and say, yep, all five are accounted for and the food dishes are clean, so they are eating, but they're not coming out to play with me. She can't pet them. She can't play with them. And, you know, I'm sitting here at home doing the broadcast, and I have all five cats and the dog all around the room with me. So they do. Pets act completely different when it's someone other than their owner. And so, you know, having this real recent experiences with how my pets respond without me has given me a new understanding of what I was seeing all those days and all those times while I was pet sitting. And so I'm going to share a couple of my most memorable experiences that I had with the pets just responding completely different to me as opposed to their owner. The first one, I was pet sitting for this cat, and I pet sat regularly for this cat for a number of years and became very good friends with his owner and really loved this cat because he was very affectionate. He did not hide when I came into the house. He stayed with me and watched what I was doing as I scooped the litter boxes and change water and put new food down and everything. But his owner told me from the very first time to mix his wet and dry food together in his bowl and that he ate his food like that twice a day. So, okay, I do it. I did it the first time. And this cat came. He took a few licks from the food dish and he walked away. Well, I knew cats aren't always scarfers of food, that they'll come back and eat nibbles throughout the day. So I really wasn't too concerned about it the first morning I was with him. But when I came back that night and the food was still untouched in his dish and he did the same thing, I put the new food down, wet and dry, mixed together like his owner had showed me, and he still took a few licks and walked away. Okay, I was worried about him. I thought, this isn't normal. This is completely opposite of what the owner said he should be doing, and he can't go any longer on just a few licks of food. So I contacted the client, and I said, would you mind if I put half a can of wet food on the plate by itself? He's not eating the combined wet and dry food for me. And the client immediately agreed of, yeah, that's fine. Go ahead and try it. He should be eating the combined food, but okay, do it. So I did. I put half a can of wet food down on a plate by itself, and this cat licked the plate clean, finished the whole half a can immediately. And so I contacted the client back and said, he ate the half a can of wet food absolutely fine when it was by itself. May I continue feeding him with the wet and dry food separately for the rest of your trip? And she agreed, just thrilled to death that her cat was eating for me. And as soon as I started separating the wet and the dry food for him every meal, I never had a problem feeding this cat again. And the even funnier thing was when his owner came home and offered him the wet and dry food combined, he went right back eating the combined food for her. So he had us both trained, I guess, because he ate it one way for his owner and a whole other way for me and completely switched back and forth without a problem, without hesitation. So that was quite the experience of a kind of different personality between a pet sitter with the pet versus the owner with the pet. Another client of mine had a dog that was a big lab mix dog and was supposedly very good off-leash. And the client would allow her dog to come out front when she got the mail, and he would stay off-leash completely by her side to and from the mailbox, use the, you know, went potty out in the grass out front, and she never had a problem with him. And so she told me he really likes to go potty out front. You know, just take him out front. He'll come when you call him. It's no big deal. And when I was over getting the keys and the instructions, I saw how well this dog behaved for the client. But I also knew from doing dog training that pets do respond differently to someone else. So the first afternoon, it was me and this dog alone together. I decided to test it. And, oh, I'm so thankful I did. I took this dog out in their backyard where I had the fence security, and dog was off leash running and playing and sniffing around. I called the dog to come to me, and he looks up. His ears perk up. He starts running right at me, and I'm like, all right, he really is trained. But I got excited a little too fast because he then did what I call the doggy drive-by. He got to be about 2 to 3 feet away from me, and all of a sudden he veered off to one direction or another to go around me, avoid my reach completely, and circle back and ran away from me. And I thought, okay, now what? And I tried calling him again. He did the same thing. Ran right towards me till the last second, turned, and ran away from me again. I had the darndest time getting this dog back in the house that day, and I was so grateful that I had the confines of the fence to help me corral him. And when I did take him out front later on that evening, he was on leash. Because I didn't trust him. He would not come to me the same way he did his owner. And he still went potty for me just as easily on leash. But when his owner got back and I told her, you know, what I had done and that I had to keep him on leash because he was doing the doggy drive-by on me, she took him right and me right out front. Dog was off leash. She called the dog to her, and, man, he ran right up to get it to a sit right in front of her and looked at her like, okay, what do you want? And I just had to laugh because that was not the response I was getting from this dog. So, again, pets behave differently for someone else than they do their owners. And now I'm going to tell you the funniest change in personality that I've ever seen in a pet. And this pet that I was pet sitting for was an African gray parrot. He loved his owner and would ride on her shoulders and give her kisses and allow her to do pretty much anything while she was handling him or while she was reaching in the cage to clean it or change food and water dishes for him. He could talk to, and he had such a personality because he knew how to say so many different things. He had such a vocabulary. And when he talked, he sounded exactly like his owner. This bird had such an attitude, though, when he saw me there with his owner as I was learning how to care for him before the owner left town. He was eyeing me suspiciously and not really wanting me to do much of anything with him. But because his owner was right there talking to him and distracting him a little bit as I was reaching in the cage to grab the food and water dish, I didn't have a problem. So, okay. This is kind of cool. This bird can talk back to me. I like this. But Once the owner left town and it was just me and the bird alone, oh man, he did not like me at all. It was a completely different situation. He'd squawk and bite my fingers as I was just reaching to undo the latch on his cage. And that first afternoon, I don't know how many times he bit my fingers. I think I ran out of fingers, new fingers, for him to bite as I was trying to undo the latch to his cage. And all I wanted to do was give him new food. It wasn't like I was going to ask him to climb on my shoulder or do any of the other things that his owners did with him all the time. I just wanted to give him food. I'm thinking, I don't know that I'm going to be able to actually take care of this bird. What am I going to do? And about the third or fourth time, he did get a hold of my finger, and of course, I kind of squeal ouch because his beak was sharp, and it hurt, and it pinched. And he had a knack for grabbing skin right around the fingernail, but it really smarted. So I, you know, said ouch and kind of tried to scold him to deter him from wanting to do that. And then his little personality came out. And he said, in mimicking his owner's voice perfectly, which is exactly what his owner had told him while I was doing it while she was there, was be sweet. But then this little bird with his personality mimicked my ouch. And he'd squeak, ouch. And then, to add insult to injury, he did his little birdie laugh. And as frustrated as I was at this bird, when he did his little birdie laugh, I found myself laughing with him. And he would have just bit me. But be sweet, ouch, and his laugh. And I'm like, okay, you just outsmarted me completely, you little bird. And so I had to figure out a way to be able to get food and water into his cage for him and be able to take care of him. Well, as the days progressed, I found sometimes I could sneak up on the cage while he was sleeping if it was really early in the morning or kind of just after dark at nighttime, and I could do what I needed to do in his cage without him waking enough to be able to bite me. Other times, I had to be more tricky. And I was so thankful that the owner had a big basket of unused bird toys right next to the cage, because she had explained to me how she changes out the toys every time she cleans the cage so he doesn't get bored with the same toys in there. Well, I used those toys to distract him. I started clipping one of those toys from the basket onto the back of his cage, and it would distract him. He would be trying to reach his beak through the bars to play with that new toy. Meanwhile, I could unlatch the door. I could change food and water. I could change the newspaper at the bottom of his cage, and I wasn't getting bit. He was busy with that toy. So I was very thankful that I was thinking on my feet fast enough to be able to come up with a way of caring for him and distracting him while the owner was away, because I never did try and get him out of his cage. I never asked him to step up on my arm or get on my shoulder or anything like his owner did. I figured he'd probably bite my ear if I did such a trick. But I was very, very thankful that I was able to give him the care the owner asked me for to do for him, even though he was quite the funny little character about biting me and not really liking me to touch him at all. And we all know that pets have an incredible pain tolerance that they can't see, that they don't even show the signs of illness as soon as you would think they do. And so I always tried to get a good understanding from the client what a pet's typical behavior is before the client left on vacation. Because knowing what was normal for this pet was a better baseline than me just guessing what was normal for a parrot or a cat or a dog. And it always makes me think of what my vet tells me every time I take one of my pets to him. He says, no one knows the pet better than the pet mom. And it's true because I pick up on things in my pets that other people probably would miss. So I wanted to know from my clients every time what was normal for their pets before I started watching them. And this was, I found it very, very helpful 99% of the time. But, of course, I've got a story for you where one time this didn't work out for me. I had a cat and a dog that I was watching in a big West Plano home, and this home was about, 3,000 square feet or so. It was a good-sized home. And this owner had told me all the places where her cat liked to sleep during the day. And there was a ton of them. The dog was always going to be greeting me at the door. But the cat could sleep anywhere from dining room chairs to the master bedroom, the master bathroom sink, the closet, all sorts of places. And she told me to keep the children's bedrooms closed upstairs so that the dog couldn't get in and chew the children's toys. So I said, okay. First afternoon I was there, I fed the dog. I put the cat food out. Dog was eating his food right away. The cat really didn't come out. I thought, oh, my cats hide from me all the time. And from the pet sitter especially, I thought, okay, the cats don't eat right away. No big deal. I came back that evening, fed the dog again, went and checked on the cat food. The cat food was still untouched. Okay, it's been long enough. I started to panic. So I started looking absolutely everywhere in this giant house, 3,000 square foot house, for the cat. I checked all the places that the owner told me where this cat could hide, and I exhausted them. The cat was nowhere. And then I got panicked. Did she get locked in the closet or one of the kids' bedrooms upstairs before the owners left or while I was there the first time? So I go and I look in the children's bedrooms upstairs. I look everywhere through this house, and the cat is nowhere to be found. I'm calling her name like I'm actually expecting her to come to me like a dog would. And, of course, that probably wasn't doing any good. So I loop back through the downstairs and go into their formal living room, and I'm looking behind the couch. And there's a baby grand piano in the one corner of this room by the window. Well, the dog catches a walker, a jogger, on the sidewalk out front of the house and runs under the grand piano to get to the window, barking at the jogger. He pounces the window, still barking. While his barking and being that close to the baby grand piano shows me exactly where the cat was. The cat was sleeping inside the body of this piano on top of the strings. Because she leaps out of the piano, hits the floor running, and races off to go hide under the master bedroom. So I was never so thankful that a dog was barking, because I never would have thought of looking inside the body of a piano for a cat. But that's where she was for this particular case. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode, because I sure have learned a lot by my time being a pet sitter and doing all the different pet sitter jobs. I learned to be more observant. I learned to be a good detective, to think quick on my feet and be a problem solver. And I learned and gained confidence in being a better communicator with other people in every situation, even if sometimes they're not ideal. And I love caring for all these other pets. while their owners was out of town. Because some of these pets are not ones that I would have for myself, but I have the experience now of caring for them through Pet City. So that's my program for tonight. I thank you so much for listening to me live or on the archive, and listen to me the fourth Monday of every month here on the Pamela Folland Show. And I'll talk to you next time. Have a great night.